You're listening to the My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Well, I've sort of entered a state of depression here in Australia because, as you know, the cricket season's turned down and we're not really doing much, trying not to get fat, and I've sort of got an injury as well, but trying to keep our hopes up. What have you been doing, David?
Well, it's very, very busy for me, as you can imagine. With the start to the run-up to the club cricket season, it is really full-on. We're getting ready for that. And the first-class cricket season has already started. So it's a cold April and a wet April, but we're actually got light in the nights now, and we've got the MCC playing against the Champion County, which is the traditional first game of the season over here in the UK.
Yeah.
And the MCC always select a very strong side. They always, it's basically a trial match for England is what it basically is. But the MCC select a side which is basically the England reserve team minus a couple of the star players and a few sort of up and coming type players. They always bring in a star university player and one or two younger players who are up and coming and maybe haven't played much first class cricket but are just making their way in the game, and then you've got mostly the England reserves. So that's always an interesting game to watch, and because they play against the Champion County, who this year are Durham, last year I should say were Durham. So always good to see Lords cricket at Lords again. So very pleased about that.
You're going to go watch it yourself?
No, I haven't really got the time, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a bit of a journey to London from where I am, so it's about to Lords is probably about 3 or 3.5 hours, something like that. So just that far enough away to think, nah, I'm not going to bother.
Sorry, fair enough.
On the coaching front, we've finally been able to get outside. I spent a couple of days recently with Gary Palmer in Hampshire.
Yeah,
at a very posh private school, because they're on their Easter holidays at the moment. So we went to a very posh private school with some talented youngsters for Gary's. Gary does an academy called CCM Academy.
Yeah.
And we were worried, because it's April, we were worried we were going to be stuck in the sports hall for 2 days. But the weather was absolutely lovely, absolutely beautiful. And we were outside and we were netting and we were practicing on the outfield. So that was really good. Really good to see some talented players. Really good to spend some time with Gary as well, because we got some good coaching done. And even better than that, we got a load of stuff on video. So keep your eyes peeled on Pitch Vision Academy, because Gary has got three new courses on Pitch Vision Academy for Gary to do. They are how to play spin bowling, the right way to play defensively, and some indoor fielding drills, which is coaches around the world, but especially in this part of the world, are always looking for fielding drills. And if you're stuck indoors because the weather isn't particularly good, then indoor fielding drills are really good. So keep your eyes peeled for them. They'll be a while because they need to be edited and all the rest of it, but they'll be up and coming over the next few months. We've also put up a new course playing back foot drives. We've also put a new course up on Gary's part, so there's some brand new videos on there for you to have a look at. And if you're interested, you can purchase that. And there's one coming very, very soon, my own course, my second course, which is Club Cricket Captaincy. That's the working title of it. I haven't given it its proper name yet, but that's gonna cover literally everything from all the nuts and bolts, like setting the field and how to pick a batting order and all that kind of thing, to some of the less glamorous stuff that club captains have to do, like make sure that food is arranged and agree local rules with captains and make sure the opposition captain doesn't pull a fast one on you, and all the little tricks that other captains try and do to pull a fast one over you if you're not wise to it. So there's everything there, tactics, all that kind of stuff, and even a little bit of coaching advice as well, because what you find is a lot of captains have to double up as the coach of their team.
Yeah, that's right.
So I've done a little bit of sort of how to plan out your coaching sessions to get the most out of your players if you have to do that. So there's a little bit of everything in there, and a lot of field setting stuff and some sample field placings and all the stuff to make it as easy as possible for someone who's a captain, whether they're an experienced captain or whether they've never done it before and they just want some tips. And finally, the last thing we've done this week is that we've added two new complete guides to the My Cricket Coach section of the site. So they're completely free. We've got the complete guide to in-season cricket training, which is very useful for anyone in the Northern Hemisphere, anyone who's just coming into their season. And we've got the complete guide to off-season and pre-season cricket training. So if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, if you're in New Zealand, if you're in South Africa, or indeed if you're in Australia, then it's a great time to have a look at the pre- and off-season cricket training complete guide.
Okay, so we have a new section coming up called Five Questions, and our roving reporter, Double Scoop, caught up with Nye Williams recently, who's a part of one of the world's biggest bowling machine companies called Bowler, and he's had 5 minutes with Double Scoop. Let's see what he has to say.
We're here with Nye Williams, who is the man behind Bowler bowling machines, and is intimately linked with the origins of the bowling machine. Nye, thanks for joining us on Five Questions.
No problem.
Nye, who exactly invented the bowling machine?
Bowling machines were invented. The concept is something that is a very old one that dates from the 19th century. We're only furthering the development of, a very old concept.
How did your bowling machine, the Bowler bowling machine, come about then?
Our machine is an evolution of baseball pitching machine technology from America from the 1970s. And we took that technology and have enhanced it and improved it over the last three decades to give us what is a fairly sophisticated machine. There are plenty of avenues yet to explore, and we are doing that, and expect to be able to make the machines better and more user-friendly in the year to come.
And I guess in that vein, what have been the biggest changes since you've started working with bowling machines? What have been some of the changes that we've seen over the last 20, 30 years?
I think that what's happened for us is that electronic technology has allowed us to make the machine more accurate. Plastic technology has allowed us to make the machines more durable. And they certainly are more consistent. And in general, that the user has benefited from a better user interface. And we're continuing along that vein. And I think that if you compare a machine that you could buy 25 years ago to the one that you could buy now, the most noticeable differences would be in accuracy and ease of use.
And for the coaches and the players out there, I mean, do you have any sort of top three or four tips for how to get the best out of a bowling machine as a coach or using it for coaching purposes?
Well, I think the sort of overriding factor is the bowling machine is not the be-all and end-all of your batting practice. It needs to be used in combination with batting against live bowlers wherever possible, because obviously it's very useful to be able to take what you practice on the bowling machine and immediately reference that to a real game situation. And I think that would be the overriding factor. The nice thing about using a bowling machine is that you can practice to iron out your own weaknesses. So if you get always out caught with a ball that pitches on leg stump, then you can practice 100 of those types of deliveries and improve against that and hopefully enhance your shot selection, which improves your scoring. So when you see a ball that you know that you can hit well for four, that ball comes along, you hit it for four, you don't miss it.
I guess over the last 20, 25 years that you've been making bowling machines, I understand you've come across a lot of different ways people have managed to either break the machines or otherwise have adventures with them. What's the funniest story you've heard with relating to your bowling machines?
Well, the funniest story probably comes down to a machine being used in a school environment and The machine had to come back to us after a few years to be repaired, and when asked what was why the machine was broken, they said, oh, we dropped it. And the question was, how did you drop it? And they said, when the three people were holding the machine up in the air for the other three people to put the legs in, one of them slipped and the machine fell on the floor.
All right, Knight. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for being a guest on Five Questions.
All right. Thank you, Knight Williams, for that. It's quite interesting to hear that even the bowling machine manufacturer says that bowling machines shouldn't be overused, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it's kind of reflecting what we've been saying on the podcast, which is always good to hear. That a bowling machine is a useful tool, but it's certainly not the only tool in the toolbox. You know, if you were a builder, you wouldn't just have a hammer, would you? You know, you'd have some other tools as well. So it's the same with a bowling machine, a very, very useful piece of equipment to have if you can get hold of one. And we've been using several bowling machines with Gary Palmer over the last couple of days, and you can really groove shots brilliantly. And for example, on the second day, we had two bowling machines going, which one was bowling spin around the wicket, one was bowling spin over the wicket, and then they would go into the nets, and you could see the difference in their technique as they as they grooved the shots with the bowling machine and then went into the net against the proper bowler. You know, some of the on drives and straight drives they were playing were really technically excellent.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Knight Williams, again for that. We should move into the question section of this show, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go for it.
Okay, our first question is from Lyndon, and he or she asks, we are doing our first outdoor session this week. The idea is to use some baseline testing. The tests we are thinking of using are timed running, T-drill agility test or zigzag agility test, sit and throw medicine ball test, or medicine ball javelin quadrathlon, or a plank, stalk balance test, and alternate ball wall throw for coordination. The aim is to revisit these throughout the season to track any progress made. What do you think about these tests? Any others that might be useful to use? Now, if there was a test I dreaded during school and cricket season, David, it was the beep test. Have you heard of the beep test?
Yes, of course. Yeah, the correct name for it is the multi-stage fitness test. And just explain to people who aren't familiar with it how it works.
I think you run for a distance of about, not long, about 50 meters. You have to run to and fro between the two beeps. And as time goes by, the beeps get quicker. And if you can't catch up, you have to stop there and you get a score at the end. So if you're doing, it goes from 1 to about 15. And a 1 has a really long delay between the beeps, whereas a 10 has a pretty quick delay between the beeps. And yeah, you base and you judge your fitness on that.
Correct, yeah. It goes up to 23. Is the highest level. So it's a test that proves your endurance more than anything.
Yeah.
So the question, although it's very commonly used, the question is really how useful is it in a cricket setting? It certainly does test your sort of strength of your heart and your lungs to keep going, especially under quite a lot of pressure as the level gets up much higher. I'm not convinced that it's a good test for cricket. I don't think it's specific enough. It's a good general test, but whether it's specific enough, I don't know. And it's also very hard work. So a lot of it, especially as you get up to the higher levels, a lot of it is the psychological side, i.e., can you keep going? So it's not really it doesn't really become a test of your heart and lungs, but it becomes a test of your mental toughness.
Yeah.
So in that way, you know, perhaps there is some limited use for it. So yeah, I mean, if someone was using it, I wouldn't stop them, but I probably wouldn't use it myself if I was doing testing.
Yeah.
Now, just a quick word on testing itself. Generally, I don't personally do any kind of fitness testing myself. but I know that the professionals, all the professional sides do. They all use a wide battery of tests, some wider than others, but they all have a battery of tests which they do. It's up to you really if you want to do that, because you can't improve what you don't measure. That is true, but also fitness is just sort of one element in cricket. You know, where there's a lot of there's a lot of different elements, and fitness is just one of them. So the question is, how much time do you spend doing testing when you could be spending time actually improving your cricket? So my overall opinion is just don't test at all in season. If you're going to test, test at the beginning of pre-season, test at the end of pre-season, just before the season starts, and test at the end of the season to see where your fitness levels have changed. So at the beginning of pre-season, you've got a baseline. At the end of pre-season, you've got the improvement that you've made during the pre-season. Then you test at the end of the season to see how much your fitness has dropped during the season, if at all. Hopefully it won't drop at all. But it's very hard to make improvements, especially in fitness. It's very hard to make improvements during the season because you're playing. So you can't really make... You can make improvements in your cricket fitness, but not in your sort of general fitness which you can test for. So that would be my limitation on that. But if you are going to test, some of those tests are very good. A timed run is always, you know, a good test of general endurance. Any kind of agility test, predefined agility test, is good. I'm not sure about what you're trying to, what he's trying to find out with the sit and throw medicine ball test. I suppose it's endurance in the trunk muscles, but power endurance in the trunk muscles, but again, I don't know how specific that is. I don't know what a medicine ball javelin quadrathlon is. Sorry, I don't know what that is. A plank test. Plank test is quite a decent test because that tests core stability. A stalk balance test, not sure what that is either. Presumably it's the amount of time you can stand on one leg. Again, might be quite useful, but the question is, how do you improve? How do you improve on that?
I mean,
you could train for the test. You could get them training three times a week, standing on one leg, and you would improve on the test. But would that cross over to the field? I don't know whether it would. So again, I'm not sure on that one. Alternate ball wall throw for coordination. Again, I'm not quite sure what you're testing there. So I'm not sure about that. The tests that I like are the standing jump, where you literally just stand in place, jump up in the air, and mark on the wall how high you jumped. Or you can buy a standing jump test equipment if you want to buy that. But you know, I just use like a pen or a bit of chalk, and I get the person to hold their arm, hold it as high up as they can in the air, jump from a standing position, make a mark on the wall, and then measure the distance. Because that tests hip power, and hip power is very important for both batting and bowling and fielding. And the other thing I would do some sort of test on is mobility. So particularly, there's a test called the functional movement screen, which is not a physical test. It's a screen, really, to see if there's any weaknesses in the body and mobility or stability. It's several tests, the main one of which is the overhead squat test, where you hold a dowel or, you know, a small wooden pole over your head, then you squat down as deep as you can squat without lifting your heels off the ground. Now, if you can squat all the way down, then you get a pass on that. If you can't squat all the way down, then you get a fail on that, basically. And that just, and several other tests as well, which I won't go into, but you can, and that sort of tests your body's ability to stabilize and also your body's ability to move through a range of motion, which again mimics the patterns of certain things in cricket. So those would be the tests that I would do if I was going to do any. But generally speaking, I wouldn't bother with any tests. Do you do any testing?
The beep test used to be big, but we didn't have any specific fitness tests because our coaches or our captain knew fitness was up to us, really. And if we wanted to play to the best, we had to improve fitness ourselves. So he knew that we all valued fitness and that we're not just going to slack off. I think it's more important at younger levels to really push the kids or push players. But once you're older, there's certain responsibilities you know you have.
Yep, there is that, yeah. Also, if you do test, you do have the problem of people training for the test. So if they know, for example, that you're going to do a 1.5 mile run, a timed 1.5 mile run, how fast can you run 1.5 miles? Then what people do is they go away and they practice their 1.5 mile running. And what they might do is they're so busy trying to improve their performance on that particular test, they forget that the test is just a method of measuring something else, i.e. you want to know how fit you are for cricket. And improving your 1.5 mile run time isn't necessarily going to improve your cricket particularly. But spending an extra hour in the nets a week might, you know, it's a tricky one. Right. It's a tricky one.
Yeah. And you've also mentioned in previous shows, David, that with any exercise or test, there has to be a goal or an aim.
Yeah.
And some of these tests don't really have a goal towards them. So I think what Lyndon should be thinking is towards seeing where the test takes them, takes his team, and like if there is really a goal for that test.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't just think about it from the point of view of a test. Think about it from the point of view of what outcome do I want? And then I'll test for that outcome rather than just doing a range of different tests. The other thing, of course, is which is a constant thing, is the amount of weight that you lift in the gym. So, you know, if you're doing a front squat and, you know, you can do 5 reps with, say, I don't know, 70 kilos. And then, you know, and that's what you're doing just as part of your training. And then, you know, by the end of the season, maybe you've got that up to, 75 or 80 kilos. Then that's an improvement in your strength. And so that's almost like so that's almost like the training is the test. Yeah. So there is that as well. You can get certain tests, you know, in inverted commas, you can get certain tests in that aren't really tests.
So sort of like a self-test.
But you're not testing it just for the sake of testing it. You have a particular aim, i.e. I want to improve the amount of weight that I lift because it'll make me stronger, and then you just get on with it.
Yep.
And if you improve, then you pass the test, and if you don't improve, then you haven't passed the test.
Our next question is from Lucky, and he or she says, "G'day David, how are you doing? I'm wondering how good boxing is for cricket. I'd been involved in fitness training with Bankstown Cricket Club in Sydney, home of the War Brothers, and they put a lot of emphasis on boxing and skipping. I wanted to know how it helps in improving your game. I'll appreciate your answer." I underwent boxing, David, and I felt that not only improved my fitness, but I thought it improved my sort of my agility as well. Like I thought I had quicker arm speed, which was what I was aiming towards about a couple of months ago. And I thought I could swing the bat a lot faster and quicker. And my arms came down while bowling a lot quicker as well. Have you ever tried boxing, David?
I haven't personally, not interested me in particular, but I do know that it's a good thing to do. You know, it does teach good hand-eye coordination. It teaches good footwork. It teaches arm speed. So all of those things cross over to a certain extent anyway to the cricket field. So, you know, because a movement is a movement and they're very similar movements. So, yeah, I'm completely behind the boxing idea. And also the skipping idea as well. That's another thing which teaches quick foot movement. And also it's a very good way of doing conditioning and also speed work without compromising technique. Because what a lot of people do when they do speed work, say they do sprinting, is that their posture is not very good while they're doing it. And they can, you know, they can cause themselves as many problems as they're trying to fix. But with skipping, you can't skip with bad posture, because as soon as you do, you trip over the rope. Yeah. So you've got to stand upright. You've got to stand in a good position, and it activates the calf muscles, activates the glute muscles, keeps the hamstring muscles firing. So all the stuff which, you know, everyday life is against, all the sitting down and all that kind of thing that we've talked about before. The skipping fixes by skipping, and you can either do it quickly for speed work, or you can do it relatively slowly over a longer period for general conditioning work. So it's very flexible as well.
Yeah.
It does take a bit of practice and work to get right as well. You know, skipping, although you can, depending on how well coordinated you are in the first place, it probably take a little while to master just even basic, you know, the basics of skipping. Then to be able to do it quickly, that takes a little bit longer again. And then to be able to do the slightly cleverer stuff, you know, the split stance stuff and the one leg stuff and all that kind of thing, that takes a bit more time again and a bit more practice. So that's good for you as well, because you're learning coordination as well as improving your fitness, your conditioning and your speed. So, yeah, I can't, you know, if you're going to cross train, if you're going to do something different from cricket, then, well, the first thing I'd say is, you know, do some weights. And the second thing I'd say is, alongside that, do some boxing and do some skipping or kickboxing or, you know, one of those sort of martial arts type things.
Yeah. And I also felt boxing sort of strengthened my wrist, because after my boxing sessions, like a month later, I felt that my wrist really drove behind the ball a lot harder.
Okay. Ah, well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it. I suppose, yeah, with boxing, you have to have your wrist behind your fist, don't you? Otherwise, you're going to do yourself an injury.
I
suppose you get used to that position then. You get used to that firm wrist position and you can reflect it with the bowling. I haven't even thought of that. But yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That would be an interesting thing to test. That would be, you know, to get someone who hasn't done boxing and get them in a bowler and get them into sort of a biomechanics lab and get their action examined and then get it examined again after they've done 6 weeks of boxing training and see what difference that makes. That would be an interesting study. So all you scientists out there.
I know a lot of the international players do boxing as well, but I don't know if it's specifically for fitness or for maybe strengthening their wrists or whatever, but they do it because I've seen it a lot.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good cross-training thing, and it's also good to show. It's also a good thing to show on telly because it's a lot more it's a lot more action-packed than, say, jogging around the outfield or doing some stretches.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you don't see that as much because it's not as interesting to watch. So, but cross-training, when I say cross-training, I mean stuff that isn't directly cricket-specific, i.e. playing cricket, running, stuff like that. If you're going to do some kind of cross training, that's probably the best form because it's the closest to cricket you're going to get without actually playing cricket. So thumbs up there.
Our next question is from someone called Jawad. And he asks, my question is that when a batsman is in his batting stance, should he have his head in line with his front foot and knees bent or straight? What do you think, David, since I'm not much of a batsman?
Well, the short answer, yes, you should have your head in line with your front foot. Both, it doesn't matter which angle you're looking at it from. If you're looking at your stance from the side, then your head should be over your front foot. And if you're looking, because that gives you because if you lean back too much, your weight stays on your back foot too much and you can't move as easily. And if you're looking from the front, then your head should be over your front toe as much as possible. Easier said than done for some people. What you tend to find is shorter people find that easier. If you lean over too much in your stance, then you can plant your front foot, you can get play down the wrong line, you can get yourself bowled on LBW, you can get yourself closed off, so it's not a good thing. So yeah, you want to get your head over your front toe as much as you possibly can. Couple of ways to do that, especially if you're quite tall, like me. I'm not tall, but I've got quite long limbs. So I'm quite, I find it quite hard to get my head right over my toe. He can sink back in his stance a bit more, as if he's sitting down on a chair or sticking his bum out. Classic example of that, off the top of my head, is Matt Prior. Matt Prior does that. If you see him batting, the England wicketkeeper, if you see him batting, he does that. He sticks his bum out quite a long way. That gets his... That gets his head over his toe. The other thing he can do is just slightly open out a little, his shoulders a little bit And in opening out your shoulders, you can just get your head over your toe. You don't have to open out your stance as well, but you can if you want. But
yeah,
keep your stance as it is in your feet position, or slightly open, and then open out your shoulders a little bit. And that just gets your eyes going down the wicket, which is always a good thing, both eyes down the wicket, and also you're getting your head over your front toe. Stay on the balls of your feet. Have your both feet flat on the floor, but just sort of be weight slightly on the balls of your feet, just ready to move forward or back very, very, very quickly.
Nice. And as always, the head should be still shooting it while playing a shot.
Still at the point of delivery, yeah. I mean, if you're going to insist on having a trigger move, which I don't agree with unless you're facing very fast bowling, but if you are going to have a trigger move, then yeah, make sure you're completely still at the point of delivery. You've got both eyes down the wicket, focusing, your body's relaxed, but your eyes are very focused, lasered in on that ball, ready to go.
Just on the talk of the trigger move, David, I've got a friend at the moment who's working between a trigger move of moving back or moving sideways, and he usually moves back, but then he thought, he's seen a lot of cricketers, and he thought moving sideways would benefit him. And I keep telling him that trigger move isn't useful, but he reckons it's going to be useful. But what would you recommend, moving back or moving sideways?
Both. Just to...
So sort of like diagonal?
Back and across.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you move back and across and then move your other foot in line, back in line again, then that's just sort of a little sort of jump across the crease almost. But it's not a jump, it's a smooth movement. Then that is probably the best. That's probably the best trigger move that you can do. Because all you've done is... you've just made a slight movement across. If you just move back, then you all your weight's on your back foot. So you can't go back again. Your back foot is stuck where it is. You can't go back. You can't go back again. So if it's wide outside the off stump, if you're playing a back foot shot, you can't play a back foot drive very easily. You can't play a cut shot very easily. You can't play a pull shot very easily. You can't play a hook shot very easily because your foot's planted.
Yeah,
unless the ball's going down exactly the right line, then you know you could be playing away from your body, and you could be ducking and diving away from a short ball and getting in a bad position because you're stuck. So it could be dangerous as well.
Yeah.
So can't go if you go across. All your weight is heading towards the offside. If you just go across, all your weight is going towards the offside.
Yeah.
So if your weight's going towards the offside, then you're more likely to close yourself off with either your shoulders or your feet. Playing around your pad, you can't score on the leg side because you're playing around your pad. You haven't got a free flow of the bat on the leg side. You can only score through the offside, cover drives, or even wider than that. So... your scoring areas are really restricted. A good captain will spot that very quickly, cut off your scoring areas. You can't score on the legs. You find it difficult to score on the offside because all the fielders are there. You're stuffed.
Yeah.
You're stuffed.
Seriously.
So don't go back. Don't go across. But do go back and across. If you absolutely insist on having a trigger move, then go back and across. But I would... My first question would be, why do you need a trigger move?
Yeah, that's right.
If he says, well, you know, all the bowlers that I play against bowl at 90 miles an hour, I say, good luck to you. Carry on with your trigger move.
Yeah.
If they're bog standard club bowlers bowling, you know, 60, 70, you know, maybe 75 miles an hour max. You know, that's quite a quick club bowler, 75 miles an hour. You don't need a trigger move.
Yeah. All right. I'll let him know.
just hand him an iPod with the podcast on it. Say, listen to this.
All right, our next question is from Abhishek. And he asks, I'm going to captain my school team and I want to see the team successful because most of the times we've been written off by the school's management. And I want to make sure that I help my coach in this by building a successful team. Please tell me how to build a successful team. David, I think I found your first customer for your Pitch Vision Academy captaincy course.
Yeah. So he's exactly the person that we're aiming at, really. Someone who maybe isn't quite as experienced as they'd want to be, but they really want to be a success at the job. So, yeah, do have a shake. Do have a look at the captaincy course when it becomes available. It's not quite available yet, but when it becomes available, have a look at that. That's at pitchvision.com/academy.
Yeah.
But to answer the question briefly, because we can't go over the whole course, but to answer the question briefly, I would say that the main thing that it's about when you're trying to build a good team, a good unit of players, is trust. That everybody trusts everybody else. Not only the players trust the captain, but also the players trust each other as well. And the reason for that is that if everybody trusts what everybody else is doing, then you can just get on with your job. Whatever your job is, you can just get on with it knowing that everyone else is doing their job as well. And when teams start falling into trouble, they start falling into trouble because they don't trust what each other's doing anymore. And that might not be the fault of the captain, but very, very often it's the fault of the captain, because the captain hasn't clearly defined exactly what he wants to happen, or people... The captain has clearly defined what happens, what he wants to happen, but people are deciding that it's not the right decision and going against it.
So
build up trust in the team. It's very hard for a young captain to do, but especially with your peers of school, it'll be your peers, it'll be maybe even players older than you, but probably players younger than you as well. There'll be a certain pecking order even before he was made captain. There'll probably be senior players who also wanted to be made captain, so you've got to deal with all that. You've got to keep them on side. The three ways that I reckon that you can do it is to be fair. The first way is be fair with everybody. Be clear on what you want everybody to do, and also make sure everybody else is clear on what you want everybody else to do. So if you've got, let me take an example. If you've got a blocker who always opens the batting, this is my classic, is I always use this. If you've got a blocker who always opens the batting, and everybody else thinks, oh, he's a terrible blocker, he never gets any runs, he always gets us off to a slow start, we should have someone else opening. But what you say is, right, what I know, you say to that blocker, right, listen to me, your job is to bat through the innings, so I want you to be not out at the end. And I also want you to give the strike as much as possible to our big hitters. Let them hit the fours and the sixes. You nudge nurdle the ball around. That keeps the scoreboard ticking, but also gives you a platform to build from. So that's what you say to him. Then you say to everybody else, right, this bloke, is his job. His job is to stay in. He's seeing off the new ball for you big stroke makers. He's making sure that the best bowlers get exhausted because he's leaving everything outside off stump. They get knackered. They have to go off and field down at third man for a while. Meanwhile, while they're doing that, a wicket falls at the other end. Star batsman comes in and starts smacking the spinner all around all over the place. So he's got a really important job to do. Okay, it might seem like he's scoring slowly, but we've told him now, to get more quick singles and give you the strike. Off you go and start hitting fours and sixes as much as you like. Then, now, everybody might not agree with that particular tactic, but that's the tactic, and everybody knows what the tactic is, and they'll just go and get on with it then. If it doesn't work, then you might have to rethink it, but as long as it's working, then everybody trusts each other. So that would be my example of that. And finally, of course, make sure that people don't start blaming each other for things, because as soon as people start blaming each other for things, then you're really in trouble. So everybody should take responsibility for everything that happens in the team. Right. If your team get bowled out for a low score, everybody takes responsibility for that. Everyone from 1 to 11. Even if somebody, if you get bowled out for 100 and somebody gets 60 of them, then even that person has to take responsibility for the team getting bowled out for a 100. And same as if you get smashed all around the park when you're bowling, everybody has to take responsibility for that, because everybody fields, even if everybody doesn't bowl. So it's your job to field as well as you can. And even if you field brilliantly, then still think to yourself, okay, where could I have done better? How could I have helped the bowlers take more wickets or bowl more accurately? So if everybody takes that team responsibility, then you build up trust in each other. So that would be my general advice.
Yeah, that's right. And I've also seen, David, that confidence in a captain as well is really important. Like, if you have a captain that's not confident and is sort of drooping everywhere, that sort of transforms into the team as well.
Mm.
Like, recently in international cricket, Ricky Ponting was really negative in his body language against the series against India, and that transformed into the team as well. And the media really criticised him for that. So I really think that captains should be confident as well.
Definitely. And confidence comes from having a clear plan. Even if you don't necessarily think to yourself, this is the perfect plan, you know what the plan is, everyone else knows what the plan is, and you're going and you're trying to, everybody's taking a group responsibility to execute that particular plan. As long as that's happening, then you've got the trust. So confidence comes from trust. I think it all comes from trust, really. But it's just how do you build that up? That's where it gets complicated, and that's where it gets difficult, because 11 people all have their own different views and thoughts and things. So, and you can get difficult people sometimes. But generally speaking, if you've got trust, then you've got a good chance of having a successful team.
All right. Let's have a recap of all the questions we've looked at so far. Our first question was about the tests, and we gave beep test a no-no because it's not really specific to cricket. And David suggested that we shouldn't test in season, but test at the start of pre-season, at the end of the pre-season, and at the end of the season to see if the fitness levels have changed. And he also suggested some tests like the standing jump test for hip power, and to test mobility, the functional movement screen, to screen to see if there are any weaknesses in the body, such as the overhead squat test. And our second question was whether boxing and skipping were good for you and good for cricket. And we discussed that it was not only good for fitness, but it also improved agility and arm speed. And skipping especially improved your fitness, and it enabled quick foot movement. And it was a very good way for conditioning and speed work without compromising technique. And it was also, boxing and skipping were also good forms of cross training. So, yeah, and our third question was about the batting stance. And David discussed that batsmen should keep on the balls off their feet and be ready to move at all times. The head should be in line with the front foot, and the head should be over the front toe as much as possible. And for the tall people, they should sink back into their stance a little bit more, sort of like sticking your bottom out. And you could try opening your shoulders a little bit as well to get your head over your toe. And the last question about the captaincy. We discussed that trust is really important to make sure everybody trusts everybody else. And we also discussed that a captain has to be fair with everybody and be clear with what the captain wants everyone to do. And you should also make sure people don't start blaming each other for things. And everyone in the team is responsible for whatever happens. So, thanks for listening, guys. Please don't forget to follow us on Twitter. And you can also subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show through iTunes. And if you guys have any questions or feedback, please don't forget to email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So from Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.